You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Thursday afternoon. Hope you're afternoon is wrapping up well. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Really excited this afternoon to not only be joined by my good friend and frequent contributor, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, but our new friend, not Kristen's new friend, but my new friend, climate scientist, formerly with the National Oceanic, why am I blanking on the full acronym? The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and currently the media director at Climate Central, Inc., Tom DiLiberto. Tom, welcome to the program. Kristen, welcome back.
Yeah,
you're muted,
thanks,
Kristen. Good to see you, Tom. I want to jump right in here because I believe, yes, just yesterday, the Washington Post reported that the Trump administration is pulling the plug on a project, multi-year project, that it was going to have two major chunks of reports called Atlas 15. Atlas 15 includes a tool that would help communities predict how rising global temperatures and climate, basically erraticness, the more acute climate events, weather events, will alter the frequency of specifically extreme rainfalls, help local and state governments understand how to improve their infrastructure to avoid the sorts of catastrophic results that we've seen in Texas, North Carolina, and including New York City. They're basically mothballing Atlas 15, despite the fact that it's basically sort of in its end stages. They're just, NOAA's just finishing up that work. It's basically like, let's get it together. Let's make sure it's formatted properly. Just shocking, all of this in this context. In the first 15 days of July alone, the National Weather Service has reported twice the number of flash floods. Of course, that includes the deluge that killed at least 134 people in central Texas, with 101 still missing. Tom, please flesh out what Atlas 15 is and why it is so essential to avoid the catastrophic loss of life that we've seen this month.
Yeah, Atlas 15, it's a classic government name where it's a boring name for something that's just incredibly important, and it's used by pretty much everyone you can possibly imagine. It's used by civil engineers to make sure the codes are up the code. It's used by city planners. It's used by anyone building bridges or buildings or anything like that. It's what tells you basically the risk of certain amounts of rainfall over certain amounts of time. So it'll tell you what has a 1% chance of happening every year, for rainfall every 5 minutes, every 15 minutes, going up to every day, every week, and so on and so on. And we are using what's called Atlas 14, and it uses basically observations from a time period that we've already passed. And we know the climate is changing, and we know the climate is changing the risks for these extremes to happen. And that was the problem that had been asked of NOAA to fix Atlas 14, get Atlas 15 going for years. For years they've been asking for this. NOAA was finally doing it. And part of Atlas 15 was taking into account those future projections for warming temperatures and what that does to precipitation. And the news came out that they basically said, stop. And, you know, they already did a pilot project for Montana. This was not something that had just started. This was multiple years worth of effort going into it. And in the end, we know that the moment any sort of product comes out, that if it doesn't take into account climate change, it's going to be wrong, like the moment it gets issued. And it's when you're talking about infrastructure and that, it's not something that gets built today. It gets built, you know, plans 20 years from now. And we're basically going to be forced to use information that'll be out of date the moment it's released.
I want to talk about this idea of out-of-date information, specifically with reference to a term or a phrase that gets dropped a lot. And I heard it used by both meteorologists and pundits in the wake of the Texas tragedy. And that is the concept of the, quote, 100-year flood. That term refers to the statistical probability of these massive, devastating flash flood events, meaning based on this old, completely out-of-date data, that's what tells you it's, quote, a 100-year flood. Well, if you look, again, the statistic just from this month, twice the usual number of flash floods, the climate has changed. The thing that we call a 100-year flood isn't a 100-year flood anymore because we're seeing these events with much greater regularity. I hate the fact that people still call them this in the media because, again, it's just based on data that is no longer relevant nor reliable. Am I getting that mostly right, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are assuming a climate that's not changing. And the climate's changing. And we've already seen this. We've seen, like, precipitation events that, like, one over 100-year flood or 100-year rainfall event basically just means at the beginning of every year, there's a 1 over 100% chance, so basically a 1% chance of that event happening in a given year. And what we've already seen is that when it comes to temperature extremes for heavy rainfall too, that what was a 1 in 100 year probability of that 1% risk is now higher. It could be a 1 in 50 year risk, which is like a 2% chance every single year. So we're seeing these change already in the observations. So
yes.
These ATLAS numbers are basically a snapshot in time. And the ATLAS 15 was supposed to say, this shouldn't be a snapshot. We need to know what's going to change in the future and basically allowing for that motion picture to be able to allow for people to know how these extremes will change. And basically, that's what was cut. So we'll still just have that static picture that the moment it's released will be of a time period that is as if it wasn't changing, which we know isn't true.
I am not a meteorologist or a climate guru, and I am not somebody who has studied this extensively like Maggie has. I'm just a regular person who goes to bed at night and expects things to be okay, like all of those people did in Texas the night before this flood ravaged their community and killed so many people unnecessarily. And I think what people really want to know is, how could this happen? And what can we do to prevent this from happening in the future? It seems like there's a lot of finger pointing. And, you know, certainly there are things that we can always do better, but there were some really fundamental things that have been missed over a period of time, aren't there?
Yeah, I mean, this was a system failure. And there's no way of, like, you know, describing it in any other way. Now, atmospherically, if you tried to create a worst case scenario, the hill country of Texas, heavy rainfall falling over upstream areas of a river that flash floods a lot that normally is quiet, happening overnight, happening right on a holiday weekend where people are camping, you could not create a scenario that is more dangerous. And then, you know, regardless of our weather forecast, and there was forecast for heavy rain, the forecast for flash flood warning came out at like 1 o'clock in the morning. This is a rural area, and a forecast is only as good as its ability to get to the people who can make the decisions. And that is clearly, we had a what called like the last mile problem. The forecast was made, but that information wasn't able to get to the people in time, or there just wasn't enough knowledge to know exactly what to do, because it's really, really hard to imagine something that's never happened before. And it's like, it's human nature. And it's just really, really difficult for us to imagine, even here, like, this flooding is worse than anything we've ever seen. It's still hard to imagine what that means where you are. Like, the river has never come up this high before, right? So it was basically a combination of all of these sorts of issues, which is kind of laid bare the problem we have when it comes to warnings about extreme weather. And that's what scares me, is that we're not prepared for the extreme weather of today, let alone how climate extremes are changing in the future. So if anything, I've been trying to say this is not just a Texas only thing. Like, this could have happened in so many other places across the country. There are places that are prone to flash flooding that probably would have similar sorts of issues. And we need to have this kind of conversation about, like, we're just not prepared for the extremes. We're just not prepared. And what does it mean to properly invest in our ability to warn people and to invest in our ability to protect people? Because in the end, that's what we want to do. We want to protect people and keep them safe and keep their communities safe. And it's clear that we're failing. We're not succeeding, certainly. And this Texas tragedy is just another example of that.
Folks, that is Tom DiLiberto. He's a meteorologist, climate guru, former climate scientist at NOAA, currently the media director at Climate Central, Inc. Tom, you're putting your finger on this next level problem, the fact that this will get worse faster. And one of the things that, as someone who worked for a long time in local government, and believes in local government, there was an additional pain point within this area in Texas. And they knew that they had great flood risks. And in fact, some early warning, what I'm gonna call water flow detections, which is literally a meter, like, oh my gosh, it's going up, and how much is it going up and how fast? And that may detect that you may have these downstream catastrophic flash floods. Local government decided not to fund that. And in addition, local government in this region of Texas decided to not invest in sirens that would have been able to compensate for cell service area failures. In addition, the state of Texas is facing tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions, in backlogged capital infrastructure improvements that were specifically proposed to address flood risk. And so what I've got in my head is, oh my gosh, climate change is making these events more frequent and more acute. The federal government is pulling back their efforts to help us identify the risks and respond in a timely fashion. And we're seeing the constriction of both state and local government tax dollars, the unwillingness to spend on this theoretical risk. All of this, we saw a perfect storm that night in Texas, and I think we're looking at a perfect storm on a much more broad scale moving forward. Am I overstating this? Because I really think this is quite the pressure point that we're facing right now.
Oh, absolutely. We've already seen it with homeowners insurance being canceled in places across three. The insurance industry knows what's going on, and they're clearly sending all. And people always say it's too expensive to deal with climate change. And my response is, like, you have no idea how expensive it is to deal with all of these extremes. And on the plus and on the negative side of that, adding on to it, the human suffering that goes along with it. So it's a major problem, and it's only going to get worse the longer we don't deal with it.
Folks, that's Tom DiLiberto. Dr. Kristen Lyerly, frequent contributor and friend of the show, are talking to Tom today about what are the weak points in our systems to avoid catastrophic destruction of property, destruction of infrastructure, but most importantly, catastrophic loss of life due to accelerating weather events due to climate change. We're going to continue this discussion on the other side. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Back, everybody. And welcome if you're just joining us. Happy Thursday afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you can watch us on Civic Media's YouTube channel or at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, Facebook, and X. So you can check out my amazing guests this half hour. We've got climate guru, climate scientist, formerly with NOAA, Tom DiLiberto, and friend of the show, host in her own right, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Thanks again to you both for being here. I hesitate to talk about this, but I'm going to anyways. In 2023, Senator Ron Johnson was in a hearing in the Senate about climate change. One of the witnesses that afternoon was Michael Greenstone, a professor in economics and director of the Becker Friedman Institute and the Energy Policy Institute at the University of Chicago. Folks, if you don't know U of C, it's not really considered to be a liberal, progressive hotbed of thinking. And Professor Greenstone was testifying about climate impacts, loss of life. And basically, Ron Johnson said, it's a good thing because fewer Wisconsinites will die. This is the exact quote. In terms of excess deaths, global warming is actually beneficial. Why wouldn't we take some comfort in that. Jacob is working mightily hard to get that sound because we've got some of it. I've used it before on this very program. Kristen, as a doctor, let me just go to you first. 130.
It's hard. Like, what do you even ask? You know, like, that's so ridiculous.
Right. 134 people have died in Texas. 101 are missing. And Ron Johnson's basically like, I don't care.
I don't think he's saying I don't care. I think he is just completely ignoring all the deaths and the devastation and just reframing it in a way that works for him. And that is what we see from Ron Johnson over and over and over again, whether we're talking about COVID or vaccines or maternal health care. He always finds some way to turn the message, to leave the truth behind and make the message something that will empower him and the things that he cares about. It is so wrong.
I'll actually just respectfully disagree with you, Dr. Lyerly. I really don't believe that Ron Johnson gives one toot. If you did care about human dignity and the value of a human being, you wouldn't say things like that. You wouldn't say things that like, oh, it's just in Africa and that's really hot. But like for the US and most of Europe, we're in pretty good shape. By the way, that's a quote. I mean, it's racist, it's classist, it's regionalist, it's stupid, it's not, and it's depriving government, and Tom, I'll turn to you now, it's depriving government of this, of the resources to help government keep the people it serves safe. If there was one thing, Tom, that you would want Wisconsinites to know about the risks and what we need to do to protect our communities, what are those one or two things?
I want folks to know that, like, we are not prepared. And there are a lot of efforts on the ground across the country working to help make sure that communities across the country can deal with flash flooding, can deal with extreme heat, which we know is a number one killer of people when it comes to weather disasters. And that can happen in a lot of places. And it especially can happen in places that don't normally get hot. We had a major heat wave in the Pacific Northwest several years ago. And, you know, 115 is in Phoenix is hot, but they know about it. 115 in Seattle is an entirely different thing. And we've seen this, whether it's extreme temperatures in Canada, extreme temperatures in the Pacific Northwest, and other places, that when it gets really hot in places not used to it, that's when you see increases in deaths, because people just aren't used to that sort of thing. And I wish people would know that, like, there's a lot of work that can be done at the local level, and especially with investment. But the key thing here is continued investment, and that's what's needed. It's a lot of the solutions. It's not like we need new solutions. We have all the solutions. We just need to implement them. And to implement them, it takes money, and it takes investment, and it takes people making a fuss about it. So the good news is we have the solutions. The bad news is we just have to have a lot more of them.
Let's take a listen to Ron Johnson's disdain for the loss of life. This is from 2023.
When you take a look at the mortality risk, again, these are all projections. I don't put any stock in them whatsoever, but by your own projections, throughout the United States, because of climate change, we're going to actually have a reduced risk of mortality overall in the United States. In terms of excess deaths, a warming globe is actually beneficial. In my own state, your study shows that we'd have a reduction mortality of somewhere between 54 and 56 people per, I guess, 100,000. Why wouldn't we take comfort in that?
And the scientist says that's in Wisconsin. The economist says that's not the total impact. Let me ask you this additional question, Tom. In my opinion, big oil has effectively subsidized their product by ignoring the realities of climate change and lying about it for decades. They had the studies that to an astonishing microscopic degree predicted climate impacts. They lied about it. And now local governments are having to make massive investments in infrastructure and trying to respond to these tragedies. Is it fair to say that big oil has subsidized their industries on the back of people like the folks in Texas?
Yeah, and the thing when it comes to climate change is that this is not new science. This is something that we've known about since I was a kid. So why aren't we doing the actions that we need to do? I think the answer is pretty clear.
Folks, big, big thanks to Tom DiLiberto, Dr. Kristen Lyerly for making the introduction and joining me this afternoon. We'll hear from both of them again very soon. When I come back, I talk about fraud, waste, and abuse to the tunes of tens of millions of dollars right here in the state of Wisconsin and what we're going to do about it. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back. And welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Big, big thanks to our last guest, Tom DiLiberto, climate scientist, formerly with NOAA, currently the media director at Climate Central, Inc. We'll definitely have Tom back, as well as Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who helped facilitate the introduction to Tom, as well as for joining us to have that important conversation. I am very sad to report some additional breaking news that as of right now, the 988 Nationwide Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, specifically created to help LGBTQ plus youth, is no longer available. I don't even know what, no words, folks, no words. Had to share that with you. I want to turn now to, I think, an absolutely groundbreaking report from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that came out this morning. And I want to give props to Francesca Pica, Mary Spicuzza, and Anna Kleiber, who put together this report. Here's the headline. Wisconsin legislature spent $26.2 million in taxpayer money on private attorneys since 2017. The vast, vast majority of this all being spent after Governor Evers and Attorney General Josh Call won the November 18 election. The vast, vast majority of this spent litigating the power grab that Republicans enacted, that lame duck. Oh, you know, we really shouldn't let the governor do the governor stuff. We legislature should reinsert and claw back some powers. Vast chunk of that spent litigating that ridiculousness. And another massive chunk spent on the Michael Gableman fraud. You want to talk about fraud, waste, and abuse? How about this? And I know something about disputes between branches of government. As Milwaukee County's chief legal officer for 7 years, for the first, I'd say, 3+ years of my tenure at the county, I watched a county executive and a county board fight over powers. And that cost the county tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars in outside legal fees, because my office couldn't represent both the county executive and the county board as they fought over who got to do what, when, where, and why. And here's the thing, everybody. That $26.2 million in complete fraud, waste, and abuse would never have been spent if Wisconsin had fair maps that represented the diversity of viewpoints in this state. It is only because Republicans held unquestionably an unfairly large proportion of Assembly and Senate seats that they were able to pursue this tactic. And it's not just my opinion, it's not just a Democratic opinion that this is totally ridiculous. I believe that Robin Voss's own statements reveal the abject hypocrisy in these expenditures, and two, Republicans from the state of Wisconsin also think This is disgusting. One of them is longtime Republican state lawmaker Dale Schultz, of course, friend of my colleague Todd Alba. Mr. Schultz retired in 2015, and he slammed this wastefulness by MAGA Republicans led by Robin Voss in the state. He said this, as quoted by the Journal Sentinel, $26 million could have bought a lot of childcare, could have bought a lot of health care, could have bought a lot of education. This is so shameful. In comparison, since Tony Evers took office, anybody want to hazard a guess on how much he spent on outside lawyers? Anybody? Anybody? $1.7 million. $1.7, $26.2. And oh, by the way, Tony Evers' office negotiates very, very low hourly billing rates when they hire outside counsel. In contrast, this is a let me make sure my buddies in the party and the law firms that represent Republicans are all getting fat at the taxpayer trough. Yeah. Robin Voss's wasteful legislature and Gableman fraud, they hire lawyers at over $500 an hour. Gross. This is gross. 8 million of this was spent alone trying to defend the lame duck legislation. And here is the statements from Robin Voss that tell you this is all garbage. Listen, there'd be one thing if this was litigation over legitimate policy disputes. What's an example of that? Well, can the government actually regulate this PFAS in this way, for example? Can the government expend educational funding in this way? Something like that, right? Like a question about the role of government or a particular program. No, all of this, all of it, including the Gableman fraud, which has resulted in Michael Gableman, former Supreme Court justice, which sounds wrong coming out of my mouth, has turned over his law license for 3 years because of all the lies and deception he engaged in, as well as the violation of Wisconsin's sunshine laws. All of this is just about who has power. Well, elections are supposed to have consequences. The GOP lost the AG seat and lost the governorship. But they didn't want to play by the rules that Wisconsinites and governors and AGs had played by for decades, if not longer. All of this was just about who gets to wield power to do what, when, where, and why. And again, none of it would have happened if Wisconsin had fair maps. And all of this is made clear by the abject hypocrisy of Robin Voss and MAGAs in this state. As Donald Trump and his enablers in Washington, D.C. take steps every day to flout the will of Congress, to dismantle departments that Congress appropriated and authorized and created, to kill the federal government, to lay off tens of thousands, again, consolidating massive amounts of power in the executive branch, which no doubt all of Donald Trump's enablers in the state of Wisconsin, including every congressperson, Ron Johnson and Robin Voss, are all for when it comes to the Trump administration. What's good for that goose ain't good for the gander here in Wisconsin. Donald Trump, an executive making an incredible power grab under this fringe theory of the unitary executive, that's what's happening in D.C. When it comes to executive branch powers here in Wisconsin, though, here's what Robin Voss has to say. And this is rich, folks. Absolutely rich. Voss said he wanted to ensure the governor did not consolidate too much power. That one sure sounds weird when Donald Trump and DOGE and all the rest of it is happening in D.C. But let me read the actual quote from Robin Voss. Quote, the norm is for one person to try to take more authority because they can make easier, quicker decisions. I think that's really unhealthy for democracy. Speaker Voss, if that's bad for democracy, where is your outrage at Donald Trump? And it gets worse. He continued. This is why we have so rigorously defended the right of the legislature and the court to maintain its own independence. Say what, brother? You mean like how the MAGA-controlled Congress is so independent from the executive branch? I tell you, if I wasn't reading all of this every day and talking with all of you about it, I'd swear it was a freaking prank. Because what this represents is that Robin Voss and Donald Trump and every single MAGA congressperson and senator thinks that we're all fools, that we can't see them and hear them talking out of both sides of their mouth, that we won't see and feel and hear the pain that they're going to cause to working families. Yesterday, I talked with Senator Chris Larson about his, frankly, standalone public criticisms of Governor Evers. And he articulated all of the things that basically Democrats agree about: Medicaid expansion in the state, the postpartum Medicaid and health care, that special education and public schools would get the same matching reimbursement percentages as voucher schools, that we need to, of course, increase general school aides, all of these things that we all want. The problem is the gerrymandered maps and a legislature that has flouted what is good for regular Wisconsinites and working families for far too long and comes up with fancy words and reasonable sounding explanations when it suits them one day, and in the next breath discards those same principles and ideas when Donald Trump tells them to do so. This is shameful. And there was another Republican here in this state that found it shameful. GOP then Senator Robert Coles of Green Bay said, this is so wasteful. He was the one Republican that voted against the lame duck legislation back when it was passed. When asked about it by the Journal Sentinel for this report, said that was terribly wasteful. I really have a belief that the average taxpayer is like, you're spending money on this? You lost the election. Move on. Shame on you, Robin Voss. Shame on you, legislative Republicans. Wisconsin deserves better. And when I come back, I talk about good trouble and honoring John Lewis across the state of Wisconsin when we return here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. We have reached the last segment of the afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, as I speak, there are probably thousands of people across the state of Wisconsin marching and protesting in the Good Trouble Lives On protests, which are happening nationwide today. And they're happening in the evening. Obviously, it's a work day. So unlike No Kings, which was on a weekend, this one's happening in the after work hours. If you're interested and maybe finding one near you and showing up to make your voice heard in our democracy. Go to goodtroubleliveson.org. They've got an interactive map there. You can click on Wisconsin and zoom in and find where the closest protest to you may be going on. I'm just going to talk about the ones in Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin very briefly, because a few of them are still going on. And folks, if you want to get out there, the sun is now shining in southeastern Wisconsin. The weather is fine. It is cool. It is beautiful. Go out there and make your voice heard. In Milwaukee, on the east side, near the Colectivo on Lincoln Memorial Drive, that's right on the lakefront, that protest will be going on until 7 p.m. tonight. So go out there, get a good cup of joe from a local Milwaukee roaster and make your voice heard. Also in the Lincoln Village area, protesters are rallying and holding up signs on the West Lincoln Avenue Bridge near 2333 South 6th Street from 4 to 5:30 p.m. That one is concluded, but I bet you if you're driving by that bridge, folks are still there. Give them a honk if you believe that we deserve better. In Glendale, protesters are holding up signs in the Interstate 43 bridge overpass between West Greentree Road and North Port Washington Road. Again, in Glendale, on the Interstate 43 bridge overpass between West Greentree and North Port Washington Road. In Brookfield, people are gathering at North Main Street and West Blue Mound. They are there from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. In Waukesha, protesters gathering on the sidewalk in front of Cutler Park at 321 Wisconsin Avenue. Get out there, say hi to your friends and neighbors in Waukesha. In Muskego, they're on Moorland Road and Janesville Road. Get out there. They are still going at it. And in Menominee Falls, protesters are gathering at Centennial Plaza, which is on Main Street from 5:30 to 7 p.m. Again, if you want to make your voice heard this afternoon, folks, go to goodtroubleliveson.org. They've got an interactive map. You can see all of the many, many, I think over 25 protests going on across the state of Wisconsin. I couldn't even keep count. I couldn't even count up all the little dots on the map. There were so many of them. Excuse me. What is Good Trouble Lives On? What is that referring to? Oh, and by the way, it's in more than 50 towns and cities, quoting from a Journal Sentinel article of this morning, 50 towns and cities across the state of Wisconsin. The name Good Trouble Lives On, that comes from a phrase coined by the late Representative John Lewis, a pioneering civil rights advocate who served as a Georgia congressperson for several decades. Here's what he also said. Our struggle is not the struggle of a day, a week, a month, or a year. It is the struggle of a lifetime. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get into good trouble, necessary trouble. Today also marks the fifth anniversary of John Lewis's death. I believe in good trouble. I believe that nasty women vote. Get out there, make your voices heard. That's how we take back our democracy. John from Milwaukee, thank you for calling in. What you got for us this afternoon, sir?
Well, I was out at a protest in Waukesha, Wisconsin, over 300 people. We had a great turnout for a Thursday afternoon. Overwhelmingly good support from the citizens, beeping their horns as they drove the two, three blocks past Cutler Park. It was just a wonderful experience. And I just, if anybody's seen a protest going on today, I got to tell you, the lifeblood is the beeping horn. You can just feel the energy in the protesters to have that support.
Oh, John, thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for getting out there and making your voice heard. I promise you, ladies and gentlemen, we can do this, but it is going to require every single one of us, not just progressives and Democrats, but Republicans and conservatives of good faith who see what is going on with crystal clear eyes, who will not be distracted by the lies and the manipulations coming out of the MAGA movement, who know deep in their bones that we so very much deserve so very much better. Folks, keep making that good trouble. Again, if you want to find a protest near you, go to goodtroubleliveson.org. atlas15.org. And thank you to Representative John Lewis for being an inspiration to all of us. Folks, tomorrow on the Maggie Dawn Show, we've got State Representative Robin Vining, who just announced her run for state Senate. She'll be joining us at 4 o'clock. At 5 o'clock, we've got the executive director of Feeding Wisconsin. She'll be talking about the incredibly draconian and terrible impacts that we're seeing for folks that are food insecure. Over 85% of people that live in rural counties in the state of Wisconsin are food insecure. I'm going to say that again. 85% of people that live in rural counties are food insecure, and Donald Trump is cutting emergency food assistance. Unbelievable. And at 5:30 tomorrow, I'm going to tell you what mainstream media is missing in their Jeffrey Epstein coverage. You're not going to want to miss it. Y'all take care out there. Keep making good trouble. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.